From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Lyman Center at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven, Connecticut, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you all. It is wonderful to be back in New Haven, Connecticut, the veritable incubator of elite fake America. We've got a great show for you today. Satirist Christopher Buckley will be joining us later. And since, yes, we're very excited to have him. And since he's been drummed out of the conservative ranks for apostasy, we're going to give him some lessons on how to fit in on the liberal side. First rule, Chardonnay goes with everything. Nothing goes better with our show than you, so give us a call. The number, as always, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Sarah Palmer Chubb from High Spire, Pennsylvania.
Sarah Palmer Chubb. How are you? Is Chubb a married name?
It is as far away from my actual name as I could get it and still keep it on there.
And you agreed to marry this guy despite his last name of Chubb?
It was a tough one.
I know.
It was a tough one.
But you felt you needed to help him get over the trauma he had in the second grade with that name, I'm sure.
The irony of him being 6'4" and over 300 pounds, I think less
No,
than that.
Really?
The whole family.
Wow, they're just, they're...
They're chubtastic.
They're chubtastic. Welcome to our show, Sarah. Let me introduce you to this week's panel. Say hello to a writer at the Boston Globe, the author most recently of Tom Brady and the Pursuit of Everything. Mr. Charlie Pierce is here.
Hi, Charlie.
Hello, Ms. Chubb.
Also say hello to a deputy editor at the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Kiri.
Hi, Sarah.
And lastly, say hello to author, humorist, and the man responsible for everything you will find at Baudette.com, Mr. Tom Baudette.
Hey, Tom.
Hello, Sarah.
Sarah, welcome to the show. So much news this week. Let's get started with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes, of course, from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Oh, yeah. That's a life dream realized, that is.
All right. Here's your first quote.
The campaign does not comment on strategic decisions regarding how financial resources available to the campaign are spent.
That was a spokesman for the McCain campaign refusing to comment on a certain $150,000 expenditure that was revealed this week. Money the campaign spent on what?
On Sarah Palin's dress-up Barbie.
Close enough. Clothes for Sarah Palin, or as they called them, quote, campaign accessories. Weird image makeover for Ms. Palin from hockey mom to polo mom. Ms. Palin's defenders said, well, you know, she's from Alaska, and they really said this, by the way, she needed new clothes to campaign in states with different climates. And that's fine. That explains the $8,000 solid platinum bikini she wore in the stump in Florida.
My God, it's extravagant out today.
Isn't it, though? Another Palin fan, Mona Charon of the National Review, she said this whole kerfuffle was caused by simple jealousy. Quote, I cannot escape the suspicion that one reason everyone is so exercised is that she is so gorgeous in those clothes, unquote. Oh, and by the way, a kerfuffle is a cashmere wrap that goes for 12 large at Neiman Marcus.
I want to be there when they all show up to try to get the clothes back and give them to charity.
Well,
no,
that's
you
thing.
Know what? She's going to put them on eBay, don't you know?
Absolutely.
Nah, she's got guns.
I think Todd's going to be on the porch with the shotgun waiting for the campaign folks to show up. Don't you think John Edwards' barber is just laughing his head off right
yes,
now?
Yes, exactly. What he could have gotten away with. The latest break is some of the newspapers went back to the stores, and they said, so we see that the Palin campaign, or the McCain campaign, listed a $4,000 purchase here at your shop. And they say, we didn't sell anybody $4,000 worth of merchandise on that date or any date. We would have remembered. So we potentially have a situation in which the McCain campaign is copping to spend $150,000 of their donors' money on clothes for Sarah Palin and her family to cover up something even worse. What could that possibly be?
the absolute fullest sense of the phrase laundering money.
I know, it's crazy. All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
When I stand in the cereal aisle, confronted by a blizzard of boxes, I feel stress, but eventually I choose something.
That was the way a Michigan columnist named Andrew Heller expressed his surprise that still 10% of voters are having trouble choosing what?
A presidential candidate.
Exactly right. There are three kinds of voters in America, according to the pollsters, about 45% firmly committed to the Democrats, 45% for the Republicans, and in the middle, about 10% who can't go outside in the rain because they might stare upwards with their mouths open and drown. Analysts explain the existence of still undecided voters a number of ways. For some of them, the constant coverage of the starkly different candidates is drowned out by the voices in their heads telling them to seize the throne of France. Others are waiting to hear what Simon Cowell says after the big classic rock number. And some of them tried to flip a coin and were confused when the tails side actually did not have a tail. Here's your last quote.
Making love to her was like cuddling a piece of gristle.
That, at least according to the British tabloid The Daily Mail, was film director Guy Ritchie reflecting to a friend on the intimate moments he spent with his soon-to-be ex-wife. Who?
Oh, Madonna.
Madonna! Oh. I'm sorry, were you answering the question or making an exclamation?
A little
right,
bit
Madonna.
Of both.
Yes, Guy Ritchie and Madonna are getting divorced after 8 tumultuous years of marriage. And it's not good news for Madonna, whatever the cause is, because if she wants to get married again, she'll have to find somebody dumb enough to think they can do better dealing with an egomaniacally body-obsessed, aging, multimillionaire narcissist better than Ritchie did or Warren Beatty or Sean Penn or an endless number of men. We recommend that you look for an undecided voter.
Well, I just want to say that having a conversation with Guy Ritchie must be like talking to a feather duster.
Really? You're taking Madonna's side?
I always take the girl's side.
Well, good for you. But I actually liked the movies that Guy Ritchie made before he got married to Madonna, before he stopped making movies, because all of his creative energies were devoted to standing there and nodding sympathetically when Madonna spent 8 hours a day ragging on Christina Aguilera, whatever their daily life was like. I don't know.
Embracing the gristle.
Embracing the gristle.
Which really should be a phrase now, shouldn't it? Embracing the gristle.
You know.
It's time to embrace
the
gristle.
It's time for undecided voters to embrace the gristle.
Carl, how did Sarah do in our quiz?
Sarah was wonderful. Peter, she had 3 correct answers. So, Sarah, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
Yes.
Your lifelong dream comes true. Congratulations. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Carrie, researchers at the University of Illinois have determined that people performing CPR have the best results when doing what?
Actually resuscitating someone?
As opposed to just pretending?
Yeah, just kind of like going like this on a table.
Fakey. No, so they've discovered that something really helps you do CPR in the optimum way to maximize the victim's chance of survival.
There must be something that a little tiny clue.
It's good therapy, especially for Saturday Night Fever.
Listening to the Bee Gees?
Yes, when you're specifically listening to the Bee Gees song, Staying Alive. This is how it works. The tempo of that disco classic, about 103 beats per minute, is not only great for showing the ladies your moves, but it's perfect for CPR. Think about it. Boom, boom, boom. So you just hum that to yourself.
And it's lyrically apropos, too.
Yes, because you're staying alive.
Right.
Exactly. Researchers
You're
tried.
You're really dead. You're really
you know,
dead.
That would bring really you. Dead. That would bring you back from the white light. Just to open your eyes one last time. Oh, no. Would you please stop singing that song?
I hate disco.
You sing that song for another 5 minutes, I'm really going to die on you.
This is the great thing. The researchers are trying to find the best kind of song to help you get the rhythm right. They found that even thinking about the BG song improves results. The study did include a word of caution to any EMTs who might be listening to the flight of the bumblebee. You could break the sternum, you know, that. By the way, in case you don't like the Bee Gees, and maybe there are people who don't, you can also use Queen's big anthem, Another One Bites the Dust. But a boom, boom, boom.
Not lyrically.
That sends the wrong message. Use that. Yeah, really.
Not the right mood. Don't just hum that. Don't do the lyrics. Also, and this is maybe the best one. Ready for this? This actually works. Quit Playing Games with My Heart by the Backstreet Boys. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Chelsea from Oxford, Ohio.
Hey, Chelsea, how are things in Oxford?
Good.
Good. And you're in Ohio. That's a swing state. So have you met the candidates yet?
No, I haven't.
Really? You must have been trying to avoid them.
No.
I'm surprised they haven't looked for you specifically to ask for your vote. It's been that kind of election. Chelsea, it's so nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Chelsea's topic?
Hey, Woodward and Bernstein, check this one out.
This week we read about a government cover-up that made us nostalgic for the days of Deep Throat or Iran-Contra. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of high intrigue in the halls of government. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yes.
All right. First, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
When Soyuz Expedition 16 to the International Space Station was shortened by 2 weeks last April, Russian officials praised it as an overwhelming success, claiming the mission's objectives had all been accomplished ahead of schedule. Documents recently released by NASA, however, reveal the true reason for the early return: veteran Russian cosmonaut and national hero Yuri Malenchenko's swollen hemorrhoid, which became critical during an accident with the vacuum device on the zero-gravity toilet. Noted in NASA's medical log as HISGA, or hyperinflated zero-gravity hemorrhoid, Malenchenko was medevaced along with his crew back to Earth for treatment. The Russians admitted to concealing the truth in order to protect the dignity of one of their star cosmonauts, but noted Malenchenko did make history again by being the first man to return from orbit standing up.
The Russians cover up a critical accident of a kind on the space station. Your next story of a government conspiracy comes from Kiri O'Connor.
A British government agency requested a study to determine which are better for the environment, cloth or disposable diapers. But when the study came back in favor of disposables, the results were quickly suppressed, citing negative laundry options. The study said cloth diapers are as eco-friendly only if washed in warm water and hung outside to dry. Like that's going to happen. Ironically, upon the leak of the crappy nappy study, parents of pampered tots worldwide bowed their heads in deep, silent gratitude.
The British government covers up a study showing that, in fact, cloth diapers are really no better for the environment. And your last story of officials covering things up comes from Charlie Pierce.
The Italian government was rocked this week by the release from the Vatican archives of a document that seems to prove that the Mona Lisa was painted by Leonardo da Vinci as a tribute to one of Florence's most famous courtesans and was originally meant to hang in the front hall of one of the city's most luxurious brothels. The report by Franciscan friar Dominic del Ponte claims that the painting's original title was Il Principessa di Bella Sera, or The Princess of the Beautiful Evening, and that he first saw it in the sitting room of the house of Carlotta Borghese while waiting for the cardinal whom he served to finish up his less-than-sacramental duties a little ways down the hall. Apparently, Leonardo had the painting stolen when he heard of an upcoming raid by the Franciscans that week, said Italy's Minister of Antiquities, Giacomo Barretti. He spirited the Principessa away, saving her from being burned. I guess we know why she's smiling. Oh, the thing she saw.
Let's sum up. One of these things was at least attempted to be covered up? Was it, from Tom Baudet, the real reason a Russian cosmonaut had to come home from the space station early? From Kiri O'Connor, a study showing that after everything you've been told, cloth diapers really aren't any better for the environment, so you might as well use the throwaways. Or from Charlie Pierce, the real origin of the Mona Lisa. Which of these things was tried to keep from the public view?
I'm going to go with the second one.
You're going to go with Kiri's story about the diapers?
Yes.
Any particular reason?
No, just a guess.
Just a guess. All right, you're guessing Kiri's story? Well, we spoke to somebody about this cover-up to get their informed opinion.
I speak of diapers all the time. I'm not embarrassed at all. I can understand how in Britain it might be embarrassing to speak of the poo.
That was Maya Mowilo, a cloth diaper advocate, board member of the Real Diaper Association, discussing why it might be embarrassing for Britons to tell the truth. Congratulations, Chelsea. You got it right. You earned a point for Kiri O'Connor just for telling the truth. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine.
Great.
Well done. Thank you. Bye-bye. And now the game where we ask people about things that they know nothing about. Author and editor Christopher Buckley, the son of conservative icon William F. Buckley, has two big problems. The first is, now that he has endorsed Barack Obama for president, his friends in conservative circles are very mad at him. The second problem is that he's a political satirist, and the Bush administration is coming to an end. And actually, he's got a third problem. He has agreed to appear on this show. Christopher Buckley, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes. So many things happening with you of late, art and life and the intersection of art and life. Where shall we start? Should we start with art? Let's start with art.
Well, art imitates life.
It does.
Let's start with
that. You, of course, are a well-known and successful author of satirical novels, primarily about the political world. Your latest, most excellent novel, Supreme Courtship, has an outlandish plot. I couldn't believe it. It's about this young, attractive, countrified woman who comes to Washington, takes it by storm, much to the shock and dismay of all those stuffed shirts. How much did you pay Sarah Palin? How much did she pay you? I don't know which.
Well, it's a novel about a TV judge who gets on the Supreme Court. And I went out on a limb with a Washington novel and made the president actually a good guy.
Yes.
You know, he's from Ohio, and it's a scientific fact that everyone from Ohio is nice. His arch nemesis, this president, is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And he wants to be on the Supreme Court himself, so he keeps shooting down the nominees that the Ohio president puts forward. So the Ohio president goes off to the Camp David in a huff with the first golden retriever, Dwight. And they're in bed looking for the bowling channel on the TV. And he comes across this courtroom drama and hosted by Judge Pepper Cartwright, who is a glasses-wearing, gun-toting, she wears a gun under her robes. She looks sort of like a naughty librarian. And it's a very top-rated show. And he thinks, okay, he's going to nominate her to the Supreme Court, and let's see if that... Yeah. Pesky senator can turn her down. So I give you a novel I turned in January, in which the antagonists are a cosmetically enhanced senator who has run for president multiple times and can't shut up versus a gun-toting TV hottie.
Yeah.
As Yogi Berra said when told that a Jewish man had been elected mayor of Dublin, Ireland, only in America.
That's amazing. Well, isn't it a problem? You actually wrote about this. That aren't you concerned with the passing of the Bush administration that we're just going to be running out of material?
Well, yeah. My inner satirist, sort of craves a McCain-Palin administration. This would be a target-rich environment. You know, this would be a low-hanging fruit. My fear is that my one regret in having endorsed Barack Obama is that he might just sort of do a good job.
Yes, I know.
Yeah,
and then where will we be?
And I worry about this because, as you know, there's There is a trade association in Washington. Not many people are aware of this, but it's the Association of American Political Satirists. And we meet generally in bars. And our motto is country second.
Yes. Let's talk about your endorsement of Barack Obama, of course. This came as a shock to many in conservative circles, you being the son, of course, of the founder of the modern conservative movement, William F. Buckley, Jr. And we know that there was some trouble with your father's magazine, The National Review, which you had been a contributor for, and the other circles. What kind of conversations have you been having? We know there was some public brouhaha, but have people been coming up to you and saying, have they been calling you a traitor? Have they been slapping you in the back? Have they been shaking their head sadly?
It's been an interesting time. Yeah, I wrote my endorsement. By the way, I beat Colin Powell.
Yeah. I saw that whole thing as a Me Too.
Colin actually doesn't really like to make a move without me.
I know.
But, what happened was that I wrote my, I had a back page column in National Review, which I was having a great, great fun writing. I figured since my dad died in February, no one could anymore accuse me of nepotism than having a column in National Review. And I wrote my endorsement in my new blog on Tina Brown's The Daily Beast. And I went to some pains to say I'm doing that here so that it will not be confused for the editorial point of view of the National Review. And then old hell broke loose. I started getting emails saying, you know, I will never give National Review another dime so long as you are in any way associated with it, even if you're, you know.
Let me just describe for the radio audience that as he says that, Mr. Buckley is wagging his finger and shaking his jowls, which I think is a traditional sign of conservative dissent.
They teach, actually, I took a course in that at Yale. I felt very badly for National Review. This is, you know, my dad's magazine, and I sent the editor, Rich Lowry, who's a very nice and good guy, an email saying, "Look, if it would make your life any easier, resign the column, this is a sincere offer." Well, be careful to whom you offer a resignation, I guess. But it was immediately accepted.
Funny. Has it been tough now that you've joined the revolution? I mean, have you had to learn new social things? I mean, it's probably hard to learn to call all your friends comrade now.
I have signed up for the Chardonnay tasting course.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Absolutely.
And after that, I hope to graduate to cheese.
Right. Yeah, right. And how are you finding the Volvo? Well, Christopher Buckley, we are delighted to have you with us. We have invited you here today to play a game that this time we're going to call...
You look like a Hell's Angel escapee who invaded the Ziegfeld Follies on a rainy night.
That was the way...
Oh, that game.
Yes.
Oh, I love that game.
Yes, I know. I believe it was an extracurricular game at Yale. That was the way the actress Anne Margaret was once described by the famous fashion maven Mr. Blackwell, author of Mr. Blackwell's annual Worst Dressed List. He passed away this week at the age of 86.
86.
Yes, he did. Yeah. And since we all know that your fashion sense begins and ends with plaid hunting jackets, ascots, and pocket squares, we are going to ask you about Mr. Blackwell's life and work. Answer two questions correctly, you win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle, on their voicemail being exceptionally catty. So, Carl, who is Chris Buckley playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Walker Burns of Ivorton, Connecticut.
I'll do my best, Walker.
All right. First question. Mr. Blackwell was born Richard Seltzer, a poor Jewish kid in a Brooklyn tenement. He rose from a terrible childhood to become a millionaire fashion designer. He wrote an autobiography telling this remarkable tale. What was its title? Was it A, The Seltzer That Drank Champagne? B, From Rags to Bitches? or C, My Fabulous American Journey?
I'm tempted by C, but I think I'm going to, can I throw, do I have a lifeline here? Or is that, or is that other?
Well, now that you're a Democrat, it is all about the collective, so go for it.
I'm going to go for A.
You're going to go for A, the seltzer that drank champagne. It was actually from rags to bitches.
Is it really?
Yes, he was more than a little catty, as
wow.
we've said. Yeah.
Wow.
That's what he called
it. Rhymes with riches.
Yes, it does. Right. See, there you are. Bit of a
sorry,
pun.
Walker.
No. Don't be sorry yet. Although I was about to say, again, now that you're a Democrat, you should be continually sorry.
I already feel guilty.
Yeah, there you are.
Oh,
that's great. Yeah. It's starting already. You have two more chances, is what I'm saying. You get these two right, you can still win. Right. Blackwell was most famous for his annual insults of celebrities and their clothes in his list of the worst dressed. Which of these was one of his choicest put-downs, in this case, of singer Celine Dion? Was it, did he call her A, half-sequined scarecrow, half-gaudy acrobat? Is it Abe Lincoln in drag? B, a Montreal streetwalker on half-price night? Or C, what you'd get if you stuck a Barbie doll into a clothes dryer in mid-tumble and kept what stuck?
Well, the meanest is B.
Yes, isn't it, though?
Yeah, so should I say
I'm
B?
Not saying. I'm saying that's pretty mean. I'm not sure if it's right.
To
it's,
be or not,
or not to
be.
Be, yeah.
B.
B, Montreal streetwalker and half-price night. That was awfully fun to make up, but no, it was in fact A. It was half-sequined scarecrow, half-gaudy acrobat, Abe Lincoln in drag.
I'm sorry, Walker.
It's all right, but let's see what you do in the last one here.
Walker, I'm going to kill myself after the show, if that will make you feel any better.
No.
Do I have one more chance?
You do. Here we go. Blackwell loved alliteration in his put-downs, as he once showed in a description of, yes, Madonna. Was it A transient thrown off the trollop trolley? B, the bare-bottomed boar of Babylon? Or C, the slap-happy, sequined, slutty songstress?
Oh, Walker. A?
You're going for A, a transient thrown off the trollop trolley?
Yeah.
We enjoyed making that one up, too. It was the bare-bottomed boar of Babylon. I have to say, we sat down to write these fake ones. It's fun. It is really fun. I'm considering if the job's open now that he's gone, we're available. Carl, how did Chris Buckley do on our quiz?
He's really had a bad week here.
Yeah.
Chris needed at least two to win for Walker Burns, but Chris had no correct answers.
Wait, but couldn't we, like, just start over?
We could.
Now you're thinking like a Republican again.
Yeah.
It's called a recount.
Christopher Buckley is a humorist and political satirist, the author of several best-selling novels, including Thank You for Smoking and his latest, Supreme Courtship. He's an editor-at-large for Forbes Life. Christopher Buckley, thank you so much
for
being with us. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Charlie, it's never too early to plan a romantic Valentine's Day getaway. We at Wait, here to help, of course. This week we saw an ad for a romantic Valentine's Day cruise hosted by whom?
A romantic a Valentine's Day cruise?
Yes. Hmm. Very exciting.
Abu Nadal.
Why not?
The cruise that never ends.
I am hinting that I need a hint.
You are.
Wait, code is Abu Nadal means boy do I need a hint, like right now.
Picture yourself sunbathing in the promenade deck while your host serenades you and your Valentine with his own original composition, Let the Eagle Soar.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Not the former Attorney General, John Ashcroft.
That would be him.
Yeah, baby.
The ads for the cruise reads, quote, surprise your sweetheart. And who wouldn't be surprised to find themselves captive or honored guests, depending on your point of view, on a cruise with GOP luminaries like former Attorney General Ashcroft, former Attorney General Ed Meese, former Senator Alan Simpson.
Good Lord.
And wait, is that Charo? Oh, no, it's just Tom Tancredo. Honey, you shouldn't have.
And the awful thing is they already made a movie called Ship of Fools.
I know.
No, you know what this is?
What is this, Tom?
It's an elaborate Republican abstinence program.
Yeah, this is the only time when you go, honey, that vacation seemed so long.
But it is. I just want to stress, it's being offered as a Valentine's Day romantic getaway with these luminaries of the American Republican Party. The cruise is sponsored by the Young Americas Foundation. It will make stops in Belize, Guatemala, Honduras, and other areas being considered as potential offshore havens for Republicans to set up their government in exile. Right.
They have day trips to destabilize the local government.
Didn't Ashcroft, was he going to like go around the pool and drape cloths over the women in bikinis?
Charlie, we go now to Florida's 6th Congressional District.
Do we have to?
Yes, we do.
Oh.
Palm Beach area. May have the distinction of having what? Two elections in a row.
A tie.
No.
A phony tie.
No. Give you a hand. This used to be Mark Foley's district.
This is the new sex pervert guy.
Yes.
Yeah, this is the Democratic perv.
Exactly.
Excellent. Yeah.
Meet the new congressman, same as the old sex pervert congressman, some variation.
This is Congressman Mahoney.
That's in fact. You may remember.
Dee Diddler.
Yes.
Yeah.
You remember 2 years ago, of course, when Republican Congressman Mark Foley lost his seat in this conservative district.
Can you put that
revealed
another way? Because,
This
whole thing is a straight line. So
yeah, I know.
Let's try to get through it.
Yeah. He was, I guess we can say that he was misusing his page-a-day calendar. His Democratic replacement, Tim Mahoney, got all Annie Oakley on him. Anything you can do, I can do better. Just weeks before the election, it was revealed Mahoney had paid off one mistress who had been on his campaign staff and had an affair with a local official, and then his wife divorced him. He's apologized. He's come up with a new campaign slogan just a week or so before the election. Congressman Tim Mahoney, at least he's not just a tease. No? How about this one? Go all the way with Congressman Mahoney. Tom, this election we've heard all sorts of nasty things said about the various candidates. Erratic, pals around with terrorists. The Montana governor's race has seen its share of mudslinging. The Republican candidate, Roy Brown, was forced to beat back accusations that he was what?
Oh, this is horribly embarrassing. I know the answer to horribly embarrassing for him. I'm proud to know the answer. He's a suspected vegetarian.
He was, in fact, accused of being a vegetarian. Mr. Brown had to come out forcefully in response to those email rumors. He said, quote, I am not and never have been a vegetarian. A meaty diet may seem insignificant to people in the elite states, but folks in Montana take their livestock seriously. But until cattle are granted the right to vote, as some there suggest, the willingness to slaughter and eat them is a major qualification for office. To demonstrate his bona fides, Mr. Brown sat down to a plate of broccoli, fed it to a nearby raccoon, and then ate the raccoon whole.
Yeah, I think in Montana, chicken is considered a vegetable.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, and visit the NPR shop to pick up your Wait Wait tchotchkes. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Benno Nelson from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, Benno, how are you?
I'm doing well.
How are things in Los Angeles?
Oh, sunny as always.
I know.
And glorious.
Doesn't it get boring, though?
You know, the biggest effect it has is on my memory, I think, because I don't have seasons to mark the time,
yes.
So I kind of forget when things happen.
Right. It's just one sort of omnipresent now.
Exactly.
Well, welcome to our show, Benno. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you're a winner. Ready to play?
I am.
All right, here's your first limerick.
Without pause, TV's imagery streams, and it creeps through subconsciousness mind streams. Then it pops up at night in a grandiose black and white. That's the shading of older folks'
dreams?
Yes. New research from Dundee University shows that the type of television you watched as a child has a huge effect on your dreams. People who grew up watching black and white TV frequently dream in black and white. Those raised with color TV or no TV dream in color. And the effects seem to be long-lasting. Subjects still dream in black and white 40 years later. Even newer research shows that viewers with TiVo are able to fast-forward through the ads in their dreams. Owners of high-definition TVs have nightmares about their poor size. And Netflix subscribers often have dreams they don't even remember ordering. And that end up sitting around undreamed for weeks because they're too embarrassed to send them back. All right, here's your next limerick.
With sad heart by the cut grass I'm kneeling. I say sorry and help with the healing. For Swiss vegetation has gained legislation that copes with some badly hurt
feelings?
Yes, feelings. It is now illegal to humiliate plants in Switzerland. Which means the Swiss can no longer call their plants names, pull off their petals while saying, he loves me, he loves me not. Or give their lilies a wet willy. The ruling came after the Swiss decided that all wildlife, quote, has innate value and that it is morally wrong to partake in activities such as the decapitation of wildflowers. Under the new ruling, lawn mowing will be considered punishable, and all bonsai owners will have to make sure their plants have signed a consent form. All right, here's your last limerick.
My husband is duly distressed about this finding he'd not like to test. Coffee places demands on my mammary glands. More than three cups a day shrinks my...
breast?
Yes. Swedish oncologist Helena Jernström was researching a link between breast size and cancer rates. She made a remarkable discovery. Drinking large amounts of coffee makes women's breasts smaller. But she emphasized coffee fans should not panic. She says, quote, coffee-drinking women do not have to worry. Their breasts will shrink to nothing overnight. They will get smaller, but the breasts aren't just going to disappear, unquote. For growing your breasts, she recommends a case of beer to be drunk by the guy who's looking at you. Carl, how did Benno do in our quiz?
Benno was great, Peter. Three correct answers. Benno, you win our prize.
Well done, sir, Benno.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for playing.
Thank you. It was an honor and privilege.
An honor and privilege to have you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I love coffee. I love tea. The Java Jive and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the Java and me. A double, 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 double.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Well, Kerry O'Connor and Tom Beaudet, they're tied for first. Each has 3 points. Charlie Pierce has 2.
All right. Charlie, you are in third place. You'll go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Barack Obama took 2 days off from his presidential campaign to fly to Hawaii to visit his ailing blank.
Grandmother.
Right. The TSA announced that starting in 2009, airline passengers will not be allowed to board airplanes without giving their full blank and date of birth.
Full name.
Right. Speaking to a House committee on Thursday, blank said the U.S. was in the midst of a, quote, once-in-a-lifetime credit tsunami.
Alan Greenspan.
Right. The opponent of Minnesota Republican Representative Michelle Bachmann raised over $1 million in the days after Bachmann called blank anti-American.
Obama.
Right. The clerk in Lake County, Illinois, is calling for an investigation into why voter registration materials were sent to blank.
Cemeteries.
No, a dead goldfish named Princess Noodleman. After a jury deadlocked in her trial for driving without a license, the judge dismissed charges against pop star blank.
Lindsay Lohan.
No, Britney Spears. A group of Japanese mountaineers claim to have photographed footprints made by the legendary blank.
Yeti, abominable snowman, Sasquatch.
Well, Yeti, yes. A tension has erupted between German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Nicolas Sarkozy because Sarkozy is reportedly too blank.
Harry.
No. Handsy. He's always grabbing at people. If there's one thing we in the U.S. know about Angela Merkel, she's not a fan of uninvited touching. So, according to the Swiss publication Le Matin, Nicolas Sarkozy, with his flirtatious pats and Gallic double kisses, is, if you will, rubbing her the wrong way. She made no official expression of displeasure, but through subtle diplomatic hints, she indicated that if he does it again, Germany will retaliate by goosing the Alsace-Lorraine with an armored division. Carl, how did Charlie do in our quiz?
Charlie had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Charlie has the lead.
All right. We have flipped a coin. Tom has elected to go next. Fill in the blank, Tom. On last Sunday's Meet the Press, blank announced that he was endorsing Barack Obama for president.
Colin Powell.
Right. With foreclosures up 70% since this time last year, U.S. lawmakers called on the Bush administration to help struggling blank.
Homeowners?
Right, to combat what they're calling sleazy robocalls made by the McCain campaign. The Obama campaign announced it would begin blanking.
Making sleazy robocalls.
Yes, making robocalls. 4 people were rescued from a fishing boat that sank off the coast of blank.
Alaska.
Right, a Wisconsin man who tried to steal a camera from Walmart was caught after he blanked.
Accidentally took a picture of himself and dropped the camera.
No, ran into a glass sliding door and then ran into a cement post in the parking lot.
That was even dumber than my idea.
They arrested Mr. Simpson and brought him to jail. After being oversized for decades, the magazine Blank announced it would switch to a normal magazine format.
Life?
No, Rolling Stone.
Oh, of course.
The customer who unsuccessfully sued a dry cleaner for $54 million over Blank brought the case to appeals court this week.
Is this the guy with the pants?
The guy with the missing pair of pants.
Yeah.
An 89-year-old Ohio woman has been charged with theft for refusing to return blank.
89-year-old, her rented walker.
No, a football some kids kicked into her yard.
Oh.
The elderly woman did what millions of crabby elderly neighbors have done before her. She confiscated the wayward ball. She refused to give it back.
You can have them arrested for that?
Apparently.
Oh, Mr. Rommel, if had I only known that when I was 8.
Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Well, Tom had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
Well done. And how many, then, does Connecticut native Kerry O'Connor need to win?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
All right.
Oh, forgive me, Nutmeg State.
Here we go, Kerry. This is for the game. On Tuesday, blank apologized for saying that parts of the country are more pro-America and patriotic than others.
Sarah Palin.
Yes, Sarah Palin. People across the country waited for hours in long lines in order to blank early.
Early vote.
Right. On Thursday, the New York City Council voted that they would allow blank to run for a third term as mayor.
Bloomberg.
Right. According to a new federal report, the number of children with blanks has jumped 18% in the last decade.
Allergies.
Right, food allergies. Tourists in Hawaii are flocking to see 2 cats named Tofu and Finn who blank every day with their owner.
Surf.
Yes. Less than a year after announcing the mobile phone operating system called Android, blank began sharing the application for free.
Google.
Right. Tween moviegoers across the country packed theaters for the release of the 3rd movie in the blank series.
High School Musical.
Yes, a new blog detailing the minutiae of a daily life is a big hit in Japan, even though the blogger is actually a blank.
Robot.
No, a potted plant. Midori-san is the first plant to actually post its own thoughts online from inside a cafe in Japan. Thanks to a sophisticated botanical interface, Midori can post endlessly about the minutiae of its physical condition, the weather, of course, Harry Potter / fiction. Readers of the blog see entries like, "Today was a sunny day, and I was able to sunbathe a lot. I had quite a bit of fun today." And comments posted by users saying, "OMG, must see pics now. Take it all off Midori." Carl, did Kerry do well enough to win?
She needed at least 6 to win outright. She had 7 correct answers. So
hey!
17 points. Kerry O'Connor is this week's champion.
Connecticut rules.
I would sing the Connecticut state song, but I don't
it's
know.
It's Yankee Doodle.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
No, it isn't. It's like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
In just a minute, we are going to ask our panelists to predict what the most popular Halloween costume will be. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting community health leaders who make a difference in America's neighborhoods. On the web at communityhealthleaders.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer, Philip Gotica writes our limericks, our intern is Ann Cadigan, our web guru is Beth Novi, our technical director is Lorna White, other engineers include Robert Newhouse and Josh Rogerson. Thanks to David Starkey and the crew at the Lyman Center for the Performing Arts, B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. We congratulate him and his beautiful wife, Eva Nielsen, on the birth of their new son, who we think you should name Carl Peter. Maybe Peter Carl, depending. Now, panel, what will the most popular Halloween costume be? Tom Baudet.
That two-headed, pointy-toed, mythical beast of antiquity, McCain Palin.
Kerry O'Connor.
See, you take a bunch of coins, like some quarters and nickels, and you glue them all to yourself. And then people say, well, what are you? And you say, change we can believe in.
And Charlie Pierce.
Actually, Peter, it's the Joe gift pack. There is the original Joe the Plumber, Joey Kramer as Joe the Drummer, Joey Lawrence as Joe the Dumber, and Senator Lieberman as Joe the Bummer.
Well, if any of those Halloween costumes are the most popular panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Charlie Pierce, Kerry O'Connor, and Tom Baudet. Thanks to George Lombardi, Gillian Anderson, Janice Portentoso, Paul Litvinovich, Gail Hunt, and everyone at WSHU. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.